Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to another edition of the Pony Stampede podcast. I am your host, Jordan Hoffeditz. I was a little bit like Coach Lashley. I wasn't entirely sure what to say after the Temple and Tulsa games. Just flat out beat downs, especially Tulsa. Where they just kind of took it to them straight from the start. The Temple game, there was that little bit of a hiccup early on. You had the fumble on the first drive, punt on the second drive, but the offense then got it together and ran away with that one. Two shutouts in a season and a shutout in a conference game, both for the first time since 2012. This defense continues to play at a high elite level. The offense is getting going. And I know what Temple and Tulsa are as football teams this season. They are not good football teams. Without Warner at quarterback, Temple is a not good offense. I get all of that. But even against bad teams, it's hard to get shutouts, even against not very good teams. It is hard to score 124 points in two games. That doesn't just happen. It's hard to throw for almost 400 yards in less than a half of play, like Preston Stone did this past Saturday. Even against bad teams, even against bad defenses, even against bad offenses, some of that is still hard to do. Yes, some of your limitations are not as limiting. Some of your faults do not get exposed. Yes, but to win 55-0 and 69-10 is nothing to just throw out the window. You have guys making plays left and right. You have, I think the offense has found its rhythm a little bit. And sometimes it takes getting that rhythm going against not very good teams. You know, I mean, you still have to do it in a game setting. Let's see. Let's just break this down really quick as far as who is doing the scoring. Jordan Hudson and RJ Maryland have two touchdown catches each. Romello Brinson and Mucci Dixon have one each. Rushing, Jalen Knighton and Kamar Wheaton have two each, while Preston Stone, Tyler Levine, Velton Gardner, and Kevin Jennings have one each. You also throw in a defensive touchdown and some field goals from Colin Rogers, who has been very consistent as of late, and you get 124 points. I think it was Casey Woods who talked about, you can't expect to get defensive touchdowns every game that help your scoring, so your offensive numbers. You can't expect to have turnovers give you a really short field every single time. Those certainly help, but those aren't going to be the norm. And so we'll see what this offense does moving forward, but I don't care the opponent. I'm not taking anything away from what they've done the last 2 weeks. When you're putting up those numbers, when your starting quarterback has played fewer than five of the eight quarters of those games. Defense, Coach Lashley talked about the defense being ticked off when they gave up the field goal to Tulsa. They end up giving up that touchdown late with a lot of backups, some walk-ons and some true freshmen on the field actually late in that game. But you're seeing what this group can be. And they'll have to show it this week against Rice, against what will be a better defense and a better offense than what they've seen. They'll certainly have to do that in a couple weeks at Memphis, and then hopefully a couple weeks after that again in the conference championship game. But you play the games on your schedule as they're scheduled, and right now they're doing that. They're doing it at a high level, and that's really all you can ask for. To be where they are, to be 6-2 overall, bowl eligible, fifth straight year for that, undefeated in conference, 4-0, I think only for the second time since the 80s. They have a chance to be 3-0 on the road, improved to 5-0 in conference for, I believe, the first time since the 80s. So, you know, this team is checking off the boxes, and that's what Coach Lashley talked about when talking about the bowl eligibility. It's exciting. They celebrated that. You've seen the video and the pictures of Coach Lashley holding up the bowl season shirt. That is something that should be celebrated. There was a time at SMU where that was the big goal. Get that sixth win. Get that bowl invitation. I remember 2006 when they got that sixth win, and it was before everybody who has six wins and even some 5-7 teams get bowl games. They got those six wins and still didn't go to a bowl game, and how heartbreaking that was. And then what it meant to under June Jones then make that bowl game for the first time, go to multiple bowl games. And now they're on a nice little run. It sucks that a couple of them were canceled, but bowl eligible for five straight years is a big deal, and it's to be celebrated. It's not the ultimate goal, but in order to get to that ultimate goal, you have to check these boxes. You don't play for a conference championship if you don't win six games. That's just the way it is. You don't put yourself in a position to do some of these things if you don't win six games. So they've checked that off. Now they're trying to improve to 5-0 in conference play, to 3-0 in conference on the road. Three straight road wins. All things that have not been a traditional check mark for SMU football in 30 years. You know, they're playing some big games now. They're playing to stay undefeated. They're playing to keep their spot at the top, tied at the top of the standings, to keep their current position of being in the conference championship game, and all of those things. So there's going to be a pressure that's going to be there that just kind of hasn't been there the last few years, or kind of as a whole. I think we saw, of course, with the extenuating circumstances, how some of those pressures and expectations and obviously coaching change rumors really sank the ship in 2021 as the wheels really came off at the end of that season. Obviously, last season had its ups and downs, and they finished really strong to get into a bowl game and all of those things. That were there for them at the end of that season. And there's pressure in that, but the pressure to continuously win and stay undefeated in conference and to keep those big goals ahead of you are certainly there going into this week. I think looking at the defense and what they've been able to do, I think the ridiculous thing is A, the turnovers are starting to happen a little more. And you're just seeing guys finish the plays. I think we've seen a lot of situations where they could have had a turnover, where they almost had a turnover. And I think we're starting to see guys finish those plays. But the crazy thing is just how many, they don't have a ton of total turnovers, but over 50% have gone for touchdowns. And even outside of that, they're leading to points. You know, starting in the season opener, you have the Corey Roberson pick six right there. Against Prairie View A&M, you have the blocked field goal returned for a touchdown. Against Charlotte, the interception didn't lead to anything. But then you have the East Carolina game where the Kobe Wilson forced fumble and fumble recovery lead to a big field goal. And then obviously the Jonathan McGill pick six that helps to seal that game. And then you look at the Temple game and what just the defense overall was able to do, I think, is just kind of the biggest thing there. They obviously lost a fumble in that game, but they had an interception late that led to a touchdown, that Chris Adamora interception that led to a touchdown. And then, obviously, this last week, you have the Wachovia pick six. Not only first of his college career, but he talked about how in high school he got stopped a couple times really close to the goal line after an interception, so that was his actual first pick six of his career since middle school, with a big Isaiah smile on that one. And then the Jalen Davis Robinson interception against led to that one play, RJ Maryland big touchdown catch. So there haven't been a ton of turnovers still. I know that's still certainly a talking point, but we're at a point where they have had turnovers in each of their last four games. They have had multiple turnovers in two of their last three games, and just the number of them that have been returned for touchdowns and then have just led to other points, I think is also big, because they're not just wasted possessions. They're not just meaningless turnovers. And in some cases, you're certainly getting the defense to score itself. This week will be a different animal. It was a little interesting listening to Coach Simons talk about the Tulsa offense, that they didn't really expect to see as much of Braxton as they got. They kind of thought that they had shown that they can really slow down and limit running quarterbacks. And so he thought going into the game, they'd see a lot of Cardell Williams, and they didn't. They saw a lot of Braylon Braxton, obviously picked him off twice. Only gave up 3 points when he was in there. It was Williams coming in who did lead that touchdown drive. But again, you know, this is a defense that has prepared for multiple quarterbacks for multiple weeks, really all conference season, with ECU using two, Temple not knowing necessarily who you were going to get there due to injuries. Really, they ended up getting the backup and the third string in that game. And then obviously Tulsa doing what they do. So this is kind of a different sort of challenge for this defense, and I'm really looking forward to see what they do against it. I think they looked great at Oklahoma. I thought they looked really, really good, at times against TCU, and certainly in some bad situations, in that TCU game. And then in conference play, they've just been lights out, in their four games, You look at ECU. Well, I mean, you can start with Charlotte. They played really well against Charlotte. You look at the ECU game, they give up the 10 points in the second quarter, and then it's nothing for the rest of that game. It's nothing at Temple, and then it's only 10 points to Tulsa. But again, this will be the best offense that they will have played in conference play by a pretty good margin. We will talk a little bit more about Rice when we return. Again, you're listening to the Pony Stampede podcast. We'll be right back.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello everyone, it's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Welcome back to the Pony Stampede podcast. I am your host, Jordan Hoffeditz. We are now getting into Saturday's trip to Rice. Obviously, Rice picked up a big quarterback this offseason, JT Daniels. Everybody knows a lot of his story, most of his story, all of his story. You know, a guy that was ranked as the number one quarterback coming out of high school by a lot of people, went to USC. He's from California, went to USC, got to start as a true freshman there, which is unheard of, gets hurt, ends up transferring to Georgia, gets hurt, loses the starting job, transfers to West Virginia, loses the starting job, and is now at Rice. So it has not been a smooth situation for him, but he certainly has Rice going in the right direction. He's over 63% on completions. He's thrown four, almost 2,400 yards. He has 19 touchdowns to just six interceptions. He's an elite guy. A lot has been talked about how quickly he gets rid of the ball, which will do some things to limit the SMU pass rush. So it'll be interesting to see what Simons and Coach Thibodeau line up with that and how they approach that. But you know, they've got a quality quarterback, and everybody, especially in college football, knows a quarterback goes a long way. Receiving wise, it's Luke McCaffrey, obviously son of Super Bowl champion wide receiver Ed McCaffrey, brother of NFL Swiss Army knife Christian McCaffrey. Luke McCaffrey started his career at Nebraska trying to be a quarterback. That did not work out there. He's now at Rice. As a true wide receiver, he's their leading pass catcher with 41 catches, 692 yards, 8 of the 20 passing touchdowns. He has 13 more catches than the number two receiver. He has over twice as many yards as the number two receiver, averaging almost 90 yards a game. He is obviously their go-to guy, which, as we saw with Rashee Rice last year, is great when it's working, when they're healthy, when the defense isn't able to take that away. If this SMU defense is able to take Luke McCaffrey away from JT Daniels, it's going to be really interesting to see how they try and counter that. how, who else steps up, how they use other guys, if they try to use somebody like a McCaffrey, or if they, you know, have guys that they can do some different things with. Their rushing game hasn't really been too spectacular. It's actually Dean Connors, their leading rusher, who is their second leading receiver. Rushing, though, he has 337 yards on 58 carries, 4 touchdowns. Juma Ottaviano, has 56 carries for 209 yards, 4 touchdowns. The one stat I love is they've got Dalen Alexander, who has 18 carries for 35 yards and 5 touchdowns. He is a big freshman out of Pflugerville Weiss, 5'9", 210, kind of wrecking ball type runner that they certainly use in goal line situations, leading to not many carries, not many yards, but is the team leader in rushing touchdowns. It's a offense that averages a little over 33 points a game. They do it mostly through the air. Looking at it, and they have, you know, 729 yards rushing, almost 2,500 yards passing. In what they do, their defense has been good, giving up about 28 points a game. And you, I mean, you look at their schedule, and they played Texas all they could handle, ended up losing it 37-10, ended up being a little lopsided, but it was probably closer than that for most of it. Obviously, they have the double overtime win against Houston. They come out of the gate, though, with a loss to South Florida in conference play. Beat East Carolina, lose to UConn. That's the one game that you kind of circle that's probably the game that they just didn't show up for. That's probably a little frustrating to them. It's not a conference game, but I think is a game they expected to have a W next to. They pounded Tulsa the same weekend. SMU beat Temple. And then again, gave Tulane all they could handle last week in a 30-28 loss. Their defense is just able to get a stop at the end. They pulled within two with over 8 minutes to go, and Tulane was able to run out all but 4 seconds of that. Rice tried to get kind of a trick hook and ladder type playoff that was swallowed up by Tulane in the final 4 seconds. So it's certainly not a team that you can overlook. It's certainly a team that has talent. It's a team that has shown it can hang with some people. But it's also a team that I think, you know, the Houston win looked amazing at the beginning of the season. I don't think Houston's a very good football team this year. The Texas game got away from them a little bit there. And season opener, I'm sure UT was taking them very lightly. So I'm not going to say this is going to be easy. I'm certainly not going to say any of that, because I don't think it's going to be easy. I think they're going to get tested. I think they're going to have to play one of their best football games that they've played this season, especially having to go there where they do have a winning record. And we'll see what happens. It's the time of the year where the best teams have to go out and be the best team. I think SMU is the better team top to bottom. I think Rice has some really good pieces. I think they've got a quality quarterback. They've got a quality receiver. They've got some pieces on defense. But the thing that makes SMU so good is they don't have one or two pieces. They've got 11 out there on both sides of the ball. And then they've really got another 11 right behind them, ready to go. I think SMU's defense is too deep. I think it's too talented. I think it's too athletic. I think it's so much better tackling in space that I don't think it's not going to get picked apart. They might give up a long drive. They're going to give up points. I think the Rice offense is too good not to give up some points against them, but it's not going to be a lot. I think Rice has some good defensive players. I don't think that's enough for what the SMU offense has and has been able to utilize and has been able to get going over the last couple weeks. That's why I think these last 2 weeks have been so big. You have to do that in a game. Again, I don't care who it's against. Even the Prairie View A&M game, you can say, yeah, well, that was against them. Okay, fine. If you want to say they're an FCS school that's not historically very good, fine. These are Division I players in the conference that they're playing. They went out and took them to the woodshed 2 weeks in a row. They have a chance to now be tested on the road and win again. And I think they're going to do that. I think they're going to have a decently convincing win on Saturday in Houston. I don't think they can take them lightly, all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, this team is just too good, too deep, too talented, too everything across the board. SMU's 12.5-point favorites, I think they cover that. I think they win by at least two touchdowns. I think you see consistency again out of this offense. I think we'll see Preston continue to take steps forward. I would love to see the running game get going a little bit more. Whoever it is. I don't care who's running the ball well, whether it's Jalen Knight, LJ Johnson, Kamar Wheaton, Tyler Levine, Velton Gardner, Zane Miners. I don't care. Run the ball effectively. And effectively doesn't necessarily mean a ton of yards. It was like somebody posted on the live game thread during the Tulsa game. It seemed like SMU had more rushing yards than they had, but that was because they didn't necessarily have a ton of rush plays, but they were all productive. Outside of the first play of the game where Jalen was stopped for a one-yard gain, kind of slipped and kind of had a protection breakdown, a run block breakdown, they were all productive runs. They all did what they needed to do. No, they weren't explosive plays. No, they weren't for big, massive yards, but they were effective getting the job that they were designed to do done, and then it opened up a pass play, and then it did this, and then it did that. So I think that's what you need to see. I mean, I'd love to see a 100-yard rusher. I'd love to see a true 200-yard rushing game, which, yes, last week was, if you take away the sack numbers, but I'd love to see a true 200-yard rushing game. I'd love to see, I'd like to see LJ Johnson get going a little bit. I think he should be completely, fully healthy by now. I think he's a guy that they can lean on. I've liked what I've seen from Kamar the last couple of weeks as he's gotten back. They've got a three-headed monster back there. I'd like to see it get going a little bit, but man, if you're throwing the ball as effective as SMU has been the last couple weeks, you don't necessarily need to balance it out too much if you can do what you're doing. I mean, looking at yardage, rushing yards, you know, when you throw for 446 yards like they did against Tulsa, 192 rushing yards isn't too shabby. You know, 358 throwing, 205 rushing against Temple. Even that Charlotte game was kind of that weird 228 rushing, 135 passing. Again, see what the game dictates and then go after them there. I wouldn't expect 600 yards of offense. I wouldn't expect 55, 69 points, but I think this is an offense that can get into the 40s against Rice. I think it's a defense that holds Rice in the teens or 20s, as good as Rice's offense can be. SMU's just too deep. They're too deep with too talented of players to have a game like this not go their way, especially when it means as much as it does for them overall. I'd say like a 45-21 kind of final score. We'll see how I feel about that on Saturday when I have my prediction come out officially in the notes, but we'll see. I see this being a good, solid win for the Mustangs. I see them taking another step forward in their development, especially as an offense. I want to see what this defense schemes up. I think they'll have a good scheme. They've obviously got the quality of player to run the scheme that Simons, Thibodeau, and the rest of that defensive staff puts together. And we'll see. I want to see this offense put drives together. I want to see them maybe go through some adversity of not scoring as easily and then finding ways to score. And I think all of that's possible this week in Houston. I will be at the game. I will try to do... I'm driving to Houston, which means I am not bound by flights or security or things like that, flight times. So hopefully I'll be able to get a post game up either Saturday night or Sunday morning with kind of some quick thoughts that unfortunately I haven't been able to do the last couple of games. And, of course, we'll be live threading from Houston and Rice's Stadium. So be sure you are on PonyStampede.com on game day. Still have some features coming. Obviously have the transcripts I've typed out from head coach Rhett Lashley, offensive coordinator Casey Woods, and defensive coordinator Scott Simons from their media availability earlier this week. Have a feature... kind of a story breaking down what this offense has done, what it can do moving forward. That is right now a VIP only story. Our game thread is obviously, and message board as a whole is a VIP only message board. So if you want to join in the conversation, make sure you are subscribed to the Pony Stampede site across 24/7. Sports that gives you access to all the sites, even if your home site is SMU with us on Pony Stampede, following the SMU Mustangs. Again, I'm Jordan Hofeditz. I appreciate you guys taking the time out of your day to listen. We'll see what happens in Houston. And until next time, pony up.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.